Dr. Kurt Aland is the leading world, no question, leading scholar in New Testament textual criticism. This text is called the Nestle Aland text, okay? He is the leading world scholar. Listen to what he says. This confirms the conclusion that any reading ever occurring in the New Testament textual tradition from the original reading onward has been preserved in the tradition and needs only to be identified. Any interference with the regular process of transmission is signaled by a profusion of variants. This leads to a further conclusion, which we believe to be both logical and compelling, that where such a profusion of readings does not exist, the text has not been disturbed but has developed according to the normal rules. None of the composition theories advanced today in various forms with regard to the Pauline letters, for example, has any support in the manuscript tradition, whether in Greek or in the early versions or in the patristic quotations from the New Testament. At no place where a break has been posited in the Pauline letters does the critical apparatus show even a suspicion of any interference with the inevitable deposit of telltale variants. In other words, from the beginning of their history as a manuscript tradition, the Pauline letters have always had the same form they have today. What's he saying? He's saying there are a bunch of scholars running around today saying, well, actually, you see, 1 Corinthians, well, it's sort of a part of this letter, and then they put this letter in, and somebody added this section in here, and this begins in the middle of this verse, and da-da-da-da. And what he's saying is, every time one of these scholars comes up with one of these theories, when you go to the text itself and you look at where this break supposedly happened, there's no variation there. Hence, from whenever that book was written, it's always existed in the way that it exists right now. But the first point is the main point I want you to hear. Did you hear what he said right off the bat? This confirms the conclusion that any reading ever occurring in the New Testament textual tradition from the original reading onward has been preserved in the tradition and needs only to be identified. We know that we have all, every word of the original text in our possession. Now, for example, in this one right here, where the text chooses Labon over Lambanon, those are the two possibilities. One of those two is original. No question. Now, we sometimes end up sitting around, if you happen to enjoy studying textual criticism like I do, arguing about which one it is, but one of the two is the original. No question. No question. And that is extremely important. Extremely important. Okay? So, that is a very, very quick trip through the subject of textual criticism. Okay. Now, having discussed the issues of whether we know today what was originally written, looked at some of the texts that we have that are available to us, how do we get that from Greek and Hebrew into English? I mean, we have amongst the group here tonight, I've seen a New King James, a King James, a New American Standard. Someone's got to have an NIV. There's an NIV back there. Anything else wandering around out there? Any RSVs? We've got a Greek interlinear for those who are scared to learn Greek. I'm glad there aren't any RSVs out there. I call that the Revised Standard Perversion, I mean version. I've got some problems with the RSV. And you've got ASV, and you've got Good News, and Today's English Version, and just a plethora of English translations. And some of them sound a little different than others. So what's the thing? And of course, your Mormon comes along and says, there's 50 different Bibles. Well, those aren't 50 different Bibles. Those are 50 different translations of one Bible. We must remember to differentiate between the Bible as it was written and the translation thereof that is ours today. Now, how many of you are in any way bilingual? You know more than one language. A couple of you. How many of you even took a Spanish class in high school? Okay, there we go. If you know anything about translation from one language into another language, you know there's more than one way to translate words, phrases, etc., etc., from one language into another. It is the same in regards to translating Greek into English. Let me give you an example. There is a German phrase, a German saying, that the German people would recognize and know. Morgenstunden hat golden Munden. Morgenstunden hat golden Munden. Now, what does that mean? How would we translate that into English? Well, we have to make some decisions when we translate as to what's going to be our main goal. What are we shooting for? And you sort of end up with a spectrum. Over on this side, you have the very literal translations, even to the point of following the Greek word order. And Greek word order is not the same as English. All the way out to what might be called a paraphrase, way out here, like it doesn't even hardly have any connection with the original at all anymore. And then over here, let's say we're shooting more for meaning than we are literality. Okay? So you've got a spectrum. Now, for example, the King James is very literal, frequently following the Greek word order, the Greek idiom, and everything else. Whereas out here on the meaning side, you'd have like the New International Version, NIV. Now, if the King James Version translators were translating Morgenstunden hat golden Munden, they would translate it, morning hours have gold in their mouths, because that is literally what it means. Morning hours have gold in their mouths. But that really wouldn't mean a whole lot to any of us, would it? Because, see, this is a saying amongst Germans. And guess what? We have a saying that has the same meaning. Anyone, those of you who have already heard this, know which one it is. The early bird catches the worm. Now, if the NIV translated Morgenstunden hat golden Munde, it would translate, the early bird catches the worm. But that's not literally what it says, but it is what it means. And the translator has this difficult task at times of balancing between literality, what the text actually says, and trying to communicate the meaning of what the text actually says. And your various versions will end up following someplace along here. Now, your New American Standard Bible is going to be much farther over toward the literal. Your NIV is going to be more toward the meaning. Let me give you a good example. Someone with the New American Standard, look up Luke 9:44. And someone with the NIV, is there anyone with an NIV out here? And this, you've got an NIV? Look up Luke 9:44. Luke chapter 9, verse 44. In the King James, well, I'm sorry, the New American Standard says, anyone? Go ahead.
Let these words sink into your ears, for the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men.
Let these words sink into your ears. The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. That's the NASB. NIV says,
listen carefully to what I'm about to tell you. The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men.
Okay, notice the difference. The NAS, now the Greek, literally says, let these words sink into your ears. But when was the last time someone walked up to you at work and said, let these words sink into your ears? Well, it hasn't happened to me recently. That's not how we talk. But that is literally what the Greek says. But the NIV doesn't give you literally what the Greek says. The NIV gives you literally what the Greek means. The Greek means, listen carefully to what I'm about to tell you. That's what letting words sink deeply into your ears means. And so, each translation makes a choice as to where in the spectrum of literality or meaning it's going to go. So, what should you do? Well, you should take Greek. Since I teach Greek, you should take Greek. And some of you have, and I'm proud of you for doing it, but not everybody has the opportunity to study Koine Greek and make a translation for yourself. So, if you are limited to the utilization of an English text, then what would be the obvious wise thing to do? The obvious wise thing to do would be have several translations. And if you encounter something that confuses you in the translation, then compare what the other translation says, and then maybe the third translation, and the fourth translation. And you will then be getting four different attempts to communicate the meaning of that particular passage. That will normally be sufficient. Okay? Now, there are various lexical aids that you can utilize. You can use exhaustive concordances, and there are a lot of things available to you like that. But normally, if you have, I would suggest the King James, NASB, NIV, and maybe something like the Amplified or something like that. Comparing those four would give you a real good shot at understanding what is there. So that is why you have different translations, is because the Greek language is extremely expressive. Even in the Old Testament, there's going to be more than one ways of rendering a Hebrew phrase or a Hebrew sentence, and your different translations are going to differ because of that very fact. It does not mean you have 20 different Bibles. That means you have different ways of translating from one language to another. This is hardly ever an issue in, for example, Europe, where the Europeans, by and large, are not monolingual. Europeans, by and large, are frequently bilingual. We'll know English and German and maybe Dutch all at the same time. And they realize that there's more than one way to translate. So it's not really a big issue amongst them. Guess where it is a big issue? In old US of A, where the majority of the population is monolingual. And if God dared to write the Bible in anything but English, shame on him. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. Yes, it is. But you will encounter people in your own churches that think that the Bible floated down in English form and landed, you know, on a satin pillow someplace and was just put into publication from there. They honestly think that's what happened. So that is the reason why you have various translational situations. Even in situations where, for example, we have the famous or infamous, depending on how you want to look at it, paraphrases of the Bible that are not translations. A paraphrase is not a translation. Kenneth Taylor's Living Bible is not a translation of the Bible. It is his idea of what the Bible is saying. It is a paraphrase. Okay? Use it for what it's worth. Sometimes it says wonderful things. Sometimes he had a bad day that day. I mean, it's just, you know, it goes one way or the other, and realize it is not a translation, not fit for study or anything like that. It is simply a paraphrase, one person's idea.